My name is Ralph Burnell. I was born in Sturton in 1928, one of 11 children. I was the next to the last. I was number 10.
Which street were you born in?
In Queen's Place. That was Queen Street, and then Queen's Place looked onto the carriage and wagon shops. The top houses in Sturton, in Queen Street, were back-to-back houses. Well, with a big family, I don't know how we all fit in with it, back-to-back. But we left there in 1930 and went up to John O'Gaunt's. We lived in Fourth Avenue for a number of years, and then we moved into number 1 Temple Avenue, which was a parlour house, a bigger house, separate toilet and bathroom.
And that's because you were going up in the world?
Correct. A bit more affluent, yes.
Yeah.
And bigger, as I say, bigger wage earners.
And what did your dad do?
He was a road sweeper. All his terminology on his timesheet was highwayman, and that's how I refer to him, as a highwayman. He was a road sweeper. And he swept the road from what was Paver's Garage to Pontefract Lane End at Sturton. Used to take him a week.
And then he'd start again, did he?
Yes, and in the course of 6 months, he used to wear a brush out.
And who did he actually work for? Which council?
Rothwell Urban District Council. And that was his title, highwayman. He worked there for, well, until he died.
And your mum, did she have a job?
Looking after 11 children. Yes, plenty honoured my mother.
What did your other brothers and sisters end up doing then?
Well, starting from the top, eldest sister, she helped to look after the family. She would be 16 when I was born, and she helped my mother. And the next brother then, he worked in engineering. The next brother started on the railway, and he was in the carriage and wagon department. He got killed during the war in Burma. And the next brother was in the engineering as well. He wanted to go into the Navy, but they wouldn't release him. But as soon as the war finished, they called him up. He was 29 years of age. So he served on a aircraft carrier that the other brother had helped to build at Birkenhead, Indefatigable. And then the next brother to that, he was taken prisoner at the same time as Dunkirk. He was a prisoner of war for 5 years. Then the next one was a sister. She went in the WAFs, Women's Services. And the next sister, she went in the WAFs. And then the next one, a brother, he worked on the railway, obviously older than me. And then I came to work on the railway, first of all as a messenger lad. And then I have a younger brother still alive. So there's three of us left out of 11.
And did your mum and dad have you kind of one every year, or were you an afterthought at the very end?
Well, I don't know, but as you know, in those days there were no television, so they had to have something to do, I understand. That's how I put it anyway. But television, my mother used to love to go to the pictures. And with one of my sisters, they'd have loved television today, you know. But as I say, they used to go to the local cinemas. Yeah. And of course, in those days, the programme was changed twice a week. So they could go every night of the week.
It must have been even a bit of a tight squeeze getting all those people into the house in John O'Gaunt's.
Well, it was, because there used to be... The three sisters slept together. I remember sleeping three in a bed with other brothers. I don't know how we managed when it was... obviously, we were a lot younger, but when we lived in that house in Sturton, it was only like a two-bedroom. It would be a tight squeeze then.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Woodlesford School in Church Street, Woodlesford. And I left there in 1942.
Can you remember much about the school, the teachers, what kind of things you got up to?
Oh, yes. Headmaster was called Mr. Wright, with teacher called Doman. Doman, I think, is, well, I don't know what his first name was, but he was referred to as Daddy Doman. There was a teacher called Howell, Alfred Howell, Mr. Howell. Another teacher called Gibson, Jesse Gibson. Her brother was a teacher at Rothwell School. Donald, I think they called him. There was a little teacher called Annie Hepworth. She was a, well, I won't say a tyrant, but she was very, very small, but she commanded respect.
Told you what to do.
Yes. And, oh, there were happy days at school. I'm just trying to think of another. Oh, there was a teacher then called Cahill, Miss Cahill. She used to take us for music. And then there was another one, I'm thinking back now, another one called Gilderdale, Edith Gilderdale. She married, well, we thought she was an old woman, but she obviously she only just turned 30. And she married a chap called Knight, and they used to live up Wood Lane somewhere.
When you were a boy at Woodlesford School then, did you have much contact with the railway and the station?
No, and this is what I've told people. When you get people using the railways as a public thoroughfare, when I was at Woodlesford School, I never went onto the railway. This is being quite truthful. Of course, there was staff on duty at Woodlesford Station, and I imagined that in those days you respected anyone that, and if they said you hadn't to play down there, like, you didn't. I have a few anecdotes about, in later years, about kids playing at Woodlesford Station and playing at other stations, one in particular at Castleford Station. In fact, I got a new name there, Mr. Nasty, because I used to clear the kids off the station. When we went into Castleford and then we reversed out to go to Pontefract and Goole, I used to clear them off the station because they were just using it at the playground, you know, with the skateboards and rollerblades and the built ski jumps. And it was a lovely platform. They took all the old flags away and recovered it with asphalt. And it was lovely and for skateboarding and that, but it isn't the place to do that.
Were you interested in trains as a boy?
No, I can't say. It never entered my head. It was just a job. And I suppose with my older brother being on, and then, say, uncle and cousin. And anyway, eventually I started, of course, to start as a messenger boy.
And how old were you when you started on the railway?
I was 14 when I started on the railway, and I started a messenger boy. And I used to go out, obviously the war was on, and I used to go out, what they called, advising men of their next turn of duty, as it's, they used to go home with a time to come to work, but they didn't know what duty it was. It could be an ammunition train, petrol trains that they used to work. They had a good idea what job they were coming on for, but they couldn't go home authorised to work this particular train. So I had to go out on the afternoon shift, especially, telling them to come on at earlier or later than the time they'd gone home with. I might have as many as 20 men to advise, drivers, guards and firemen.
And where was that?
At Sturton. And, of course, some of them lived more or less locally. Some in Sturton, Hunslet, Belle Isle, Middleton. I used to go up to Middleton. That's when the bike was working.
And did you have to do that in the middle of the night? Did you have to get them out of bed as well?
No. You couldn't work nights until you were 16. When I got to 16 and I started firing duties, because I knew the area, when any of the knockers-up was off ill or holidays, they used to put me on knocking up. And, of course, you might have had 30 men in a night to knock up.
So you kind of had a list on a bit of paper and the names of the men and where they lived.
Oh, yes.
And what did the knocking up involve?
The best thing to do to knock up with a piece of wood, and it rung on the wall, you know it. If you imagine knocking on the wall with a piece of stick, hard wood, it was sufficient. But some chaps wanted knocking up at the front and the others knocking up at the back. And of course, you got to know this by trial and error. You'd knock them up, and if they were on at 3 o'clock, each man was allowed an hour. So he'd knock them up at 2 o'clock if they were on at 3 o'clock. There's a story, how true it is, we don't know, but there was a chap at Sturton, and he was known as the Vicar, nicknamed the Vicar. It said, how truthfully, I don't know this, but one of the young lads, a cleaner, was sent knocking up, and he knocked and knocked at this one in Hunslet, and he answered, he opened the window and says, "Do you know who I am? I'm the Vicar of Hunslet." He says, "I don't give a bugger away." He says, "But there's on at 4 o'clock, he says. And of course, whether that's true, we don't know, like, but there's always a bit of embroidery.
Yeah. But and did you get reaction from the neighbours? Because you'd be waking neighbours up as well, wouldn't you?
One chap, I'll tell you his name, you can do what you want with the call him, George Goodair, and he lived in just against the sidings at Hunslet. And I knocked and knocked and knocked, and I couldn't get no answer from him. So I went into the sidings to use the telephone. It was a circuit telephone back to the shed. "I can't get George Goodair up." "Oh, well, just carry on and do your knock." So what they used to do, if a man was missed a call, he could come down to the shed as soon as he woke up in the morning, 9 o'clock, and he hadn't been knocked, and he'd get his day's pay. Well, George Goodair came to the shed, he hadn't been knocked, but they said, "Go back and tell all your neighbours were awakened, but you wasn't, like, you know." But, oh, there's several stories. If you got a fireman and driver that was on at the same time, one lived in Hunslet and the other lived in Belle Isle, and you'd know a bicycle, sometimes it was punctured, you couldn't get the spares, you couldn't get inner tubes and cycle patches and things like that. And, of course, it was a bit of a dash then to get from one to the other, knocking them up at the same time. You'd knock one up a little bit earlier and the other one a little bit late. I did the job on and off quite a while, and in fact, but as a young, I wanted to be firing, with knowing the area that they'd taken me off to do the knocking up. I still got the fireman's rate of pay, but it was, I don't know, say demeaning, but it was just that I wanted to be firing.
Right. Now, how did you get that first job? Did you have to apply, or did you just turn up at the shed and say, "Give us a job"?
No, well, I suppose it was through my uncle, and then I went down, and before I actually started, I had to go to Manchester to have a medical, and then I suppose I'd be notified by a letter that I'd got a job and had to report at Sturton Loco. In fact, I started on the 2nd of October 1942, and of course it's a strange job.
What was your wage?
Oh, I've no idea, not a lot, but I used to tip it up at home. In fact, I tipped up at home until I was about 22.
Everything. Did you get some pocket money back?
Oh, yes. I think I were better off with that arrangement than... And, of course, well, it wasn't until I started courting that my mother said, "Well, you start paying your board now if you want. You're saving up to get married."
Do you remember where you had that medical in Manchester?
On platform 13 in old Manchester Vic station. It was a carriage in the station, Manchester Victoria station.
And that's where the medical people were?
That's right, yes. Yeah.
Tell me about Sturton Loco, because it's not there anymore. Where was it, Hannah? How big was it, and what kind of things was it used for?
Well, it was a round engine shed. I think there was 24 pits for stabling engines. I think there were 4 pits that would accommodate the larger engines, Class 8 engines. When I started, they had one Class 8, 8140 was the number of it. afterwards we got 8138 and 8139 to go along with 8140. And we used to have four Class 7 freight engines, 080s, Fowler built, I think, something like that, I believe they were. I think we had four of them, 9538, 9539, 9537, 38, 90, up to 9540. And we'd won Crab, a Class 5, 2770, I think it was. And then the other ones were Class 4 engines, Class 3s, Class 2s, and one or two shunt, well, quite a few shunt engines, Class 1s and Class 3 tank engines.
And do you know how many men were working there when you were there?
Oh, I should think there'd be up to 150. I should imagine at least 150 in the loco department. That was drivers for... With guards, there would be approximately 200.
And was it open 24 hours a day?
Oh, yes, 7 days a week, yes. Yeah. Yes, 52 weeks a year. Oh, yes, Christmas Day was... There was obviously less going off at Christmas time, but holiday times, they used to shut down... Well, not shut down, but there wasn't as much traffic about. When the pits closed for a week, in there was very little... need for the engines then.
So as a young man, as a young fireman, after you were 16, what kind of work did you do with those engines? Where did you go? What kind of trains did you pull?
Initially, at 16, the duties you were kept on was shunting and local duties. And then when you got a bit more experience, and of course, sometimes you'd got certain drivers that if you weren't up to scratch, they wouldn't take you, like, and of course that was in those days, if the driver said I'm not taking him, he didn't take him. And then we used to go a bit further afield. We used to go on the north run, we'd go Skipton, Carnforth, Lancaster and to Carlisle, and of course they were Lancaster, Carnforth was a private lodge, Lancaster was a private lodge.
What's a lodge?
Well, a lodging house. At Carnforth, it was a little cottage by the side of the canal. Mrs. Marshall, they called her. I always remember that. And sometimes you had to sleep with the driver. The guard had a separate bed.
What, you had to sleep in the same bed?
Bed as the driver, yes. Oh, yes.
And this was overnight? You went up there one day and came back the next,
and you'd store there, and you'd have about... When you were at a way station, you had 9 hours off, but at home, turned round, it was 12 hours, you know, rest. But usually 9 or 10 hours. Carlisle, that was a lodging house. There was like a dormitory, a communal mess room, and, you know, where you did your fry-ups and that, like, you know, if you did anything to fry up.
What happens if you didn't get on with the driver that you were with and you had to share the bed with him?
Tough.
and in those days, I don't suppose you got any funny looks for doing that kind of thing, did you?
Oh, no. I didn't know that there was anything against two men. I mean, I slept with my brothers all those years, you know, but I never thought of that, like, you know.
You're a bit like Morecambe and Wise.
Aye, yeah. And... when they used to go to Towton, that was in the Midlands. Towton, that was a private lodge. Derby, that was private as well. And then I think in 1948, that's when I got to be a regular fireman. I think they cut down with lodging. And that's when I got to be a regular fireman, 1948. So... it was still a learning process, you know, you were learning as you went along. And of course, some drivers, they were a bit heavy-handed with the regulator, you know, you burnt more coal with them, and some drivers would be a bit more sympathetic with you, you know, but some drivers, what they used to call the collier's friend, he used to burn a lot of coal, you know. But a lot of men left the railways and went on to the other jobs, I think it was the shifts and that...
It was a mucky job, that, wasn't it?
It was, yes, but it was how you approached it. If you could keep yourself a little bit clean, if suited you to be clean, you know, clean up on the footplate. And in fact, on my latter days as a driver on steam, I had to remonstrate with my fireman for not keeping the footplate clean. He was doing a John Charles sweep up, as we used to say, kicking the lumps of coal off, like, you know, but we had a hand brush, and had to tell him to keep the footplate clean, and then you'd have a slacking pipe where you could use water from the injectors to keep the dust down, and keep. We used to use it for spraying the tender, the coal on the tender, to keep the dust down. So it was up to you to keep. And we used to rub the front of the engine down with a greasy rag, oily rag, and also that used to clean up the brasses and on the back plate of the boiler. I suppose it stopped the dust. The worst dust we got was from the briquettes. They were coal bricks. They used to break up, and it was like cement and cemented coal dust and cemented together. They were
and not very good for steaming.
No.